The latest disclosure to WikiLeaks about the intelligence community's technical capabilities highlights a simple fact. The government doesn't always disclose the cybersecurity vulnerabilities it finds in commercial software. The IC is not shy about it. Officials say they need to leave some security holes open so they can use them to spy on foreign adversaries. That position puts the IC at odds with the U.S. software industry. Daniel Castro is vice president of the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation. He talked with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu about why he thinks the government needs to adopt a, quote, responsible disclosure policy in line with what private sector security researchers have done.
The purpose of a responsible disclosure policy is to get information out as quickly as possible to minimize risk. And so what that generally means is that when a vulnerability is discovered in software, it's communicated accurately and quickly to the developers, who can then go and patch the system before the vulnerability is widely known and exploits can be developed. It also means, though, if a developer does not choose to take action after a reasonable amount of time, that they know that whoever discloses vulnerability will then go and make that vulnerability public. That way, any users of any affected hardware or software can take any steps they think are necessary to minimize the risk of running any technology with vulnerabilities on it.
Right. So they can make their own decision if they want to stop using that particular product if it hasn't been patched, let's say.
Right. Or, you know, if it's open source, maybe make a patch themselves or implement some other kind of countermeasures to mitigate the threat.
So the government says that it has an overwhelming bias in favor of disclosing vulnerabilities when it runs across them. And in fact, the NSA says it does disclose 91% of what it finds so that vendors can, as you said, fix the problems. But you know, they say there are some that they need to hold on to because they're providing intelligence value at the moment. You know, they're currently being exploited by the agency to collect on a foreign adversary, et cetera. So, softball question, why is 91% not good enough in your view?
Yeah, well, there's two problems with that 91% number. First of all, that number doesn't really tell you how long they hold on to a vulnerability. So if they hold on to something for, you know, a week or a year or 2 years or 3 years, and then eventually disclose it, that still counts as in that 91%. So that number by itself isn't a very good metric. The second problem with that number is, you know, the NSA, for all, its capabilities, doesn't have the ability to know which vulnerabilities are ones that have not been discovered by somebody else. And that's really the central issue here. If, you know, the 9% are vulnerabilities that Russia or China or, you know, some other, you know, just for-profit hacker has discovered, that's putting Americans at risk and unnecessarily. And so, you know, the reason to, you know, bring that 91% number as close to 100 as possible is because we simply don't know what's in that 9% and how much impact that can have. And to give a very specific example of this, you know, the NSA reportedly allowed a major security flaw, which was known as Heartbleed, to exist for years, specifically because they were able to exploit it for surveillance purposes. But when a Google engineer discovered this vulnerability in 2014, you know, this was a vulnerability that was affecting 2/3 of the world's websites. So the risk of, you know, the risk of keeping these vulnerabilities undisclosed can have tremendous impact.
You sort of anticipated my next question there, but go with me on this premise for just a second anyway. You know, that there is an interagency process that the National Security Council, the government, uses to decide which vulnerabilities it needs to sit on and which ones it should disclose. And I don't know this for a fact, but I would have to imagine that one of the factors they weigh is the one that you just alluded to, you know, is this a vulnerability that only we know about that's not currently being exploited by hackers or anyone else? You know, if anyone has the ability to determine that, it's probably NSA, one of the world's largest intelligence agencies. If that were the case, if they can determine that only they know about a certain vulnerability, what would be the problem with holding on to it? You know, if only the good guys know about a certain backdoor.
I mean, if the NSA or, you know, any other U.S. intelligence agency could know with absolute certainty that, one, nobody else knew about it, and that nobody else was going to find out about it, then holding on to it and, you know, would not put Americans at risk. I mean, you know, by definition. But the problem is, you know, the NSA is simply not going to know the intelligence capabilities of other agencies. They're not going to know what vulnerabilities have been found, and they're also not going to be able to anticipate when an independent actor will discover a vulnerability. And the reason that matters is if an independent actor discovers it, develops an exploit, you know, even if the NSA alerts someone on day one of that exploit being used, it still might be 45 days before a patch is developed. So that lag there can have tremendous impact.
Given that lag time, is there maybe a middle ground here? I mean, could you set up a framework where, let's say the NSA has an ongoing operation where it's actively collecting against a foreign target, but it goes ahead and discloses the vulnerability to the software maker so that they can at least start the process of developing a patch, developing a fix, and then releasing that fix as soon as the NSA's, you know, ongoing collection is over? Would that partially satisfy some of the concerns that you have?
It would. I mean, you know, even today, if, you know, the NSA discloses a vulnerability, it's not going to be patched overnight, right, and they can still exploit it. More than that, you know, even if a system is, you know, patchable, it doesn't mean it actually will be patched in practice. And so, you know, just because the vulnerability has been disclosed to a vendor, it doesn't mean that, you know, the target of any surveillance will necessarily receive that update. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, this gets to, you know, one of those fundamental problems that we have in our U.S. Cyber policy, which is that we're putting our ability to penetrate our adversaries' networks ahead of our ability to defend our own. And, you know, when we prioritize things in that way, we're always going to be coming down the side of, you know, let's let Americans be insecure instead of focusing on security and trying to get intelligence through other means.
If we do go in that direction, though, and fully make that trade-off in favor of security, you know, cybersecurity in favor of, you know, the ability to penetrate foreign systems, you know, 100% disclosure, that almost begs the question of why even bother to have a foreign intelligence service that's focused on intel collection through cyber in the first place, if you're going to force them to shut down their entry points into those foreign systems every time they find one. Because I think we can say with a pretty high degree of certainty that China and Russia are not going to play by those same rules.
Well, I mean, I think there's a few things there. I mean, first of all, you know, the U.S. will be more secure if our systems are being patched. And if the NSA is and other intelligence agencies are, you know, putting dedicated resources behind finding vulnerabilities and helping making Americans more secure that way. So, you know, there's a, you know, there is maybe loss on one side of the equation, but there's also gain on the other. And so I think we need to consider that balance. But second, you know, there is, you know, of course, the issue of implementation. So, you know, there's, you know, what we want to see is we want to see the U.S. government doing everything they can to make American businesses and citizens secure. That means, you know, getting them access to secure software, and that means possibly, you know, helping them even if they have issues themselves with implementation. But, you know, I'm not suggesting the NSA go out and help ISIS secure its networks. So, you know, when they don't have that expertise, they're still going to be making mistakes. There are still ways to exploit vulnerabilities in terms of implementation. And of course, there's other types of intelligence gathering activities that will continue to go on that also will yield results.
That's Daniel Castro, Vice President of the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu. We'll post a link to Castro's blog post about responsible disclosure and this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.